This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. I hope you've been able to listen to me from 9 to noon, Surratt before that, and now on the Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. Terry Savage, the financial expert, joins us. I walked by a bunch of TVs today, and there you were on all of them, Terry, and it said financial expert.
And I thought, WGN TV on Wednesday mornings.
I thought, boy, there's a lot of things we could put under your picture besides a financial expert, like lifesaver for a lot of people. So thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
So where do we start? What's the news on the stimulus front, Terry?
Right. Well, the big news is today that the IRS set another millions of direct deposit stimulus payments should be landing in people's bank accounts today, and maybe some banks will say, make it appear tomorrow on your account. So that's the first place you look. And in addition to that, they are mailing out either paper checks or debit cards. Now, I'm going to tell you a story of someone who posted on my blog. I got one of these cards, and I think it's a scam that relates to unemployment. You know, I didn't ask for a card in the mail, so I cut it up. And I said, whoa, wait, what'd it look like? Well, it had something called Money Network on it. I didn't know. Well, that's your stimulus card, sir. He had to call the go online to EIPcard.com to request a new one be sent. The cards will come, so please look for these. I can't tell you who's going to get a card, who's going to get a direct deposit, who's going to get a check in terms of people that have filed tax returns. I know that any minute, because there's been a big uproar, that Social Security recipients, SSI recipients, SSDI recipients, disability, railroad retirement benefits, veterans benefits, those are always direct deposits. That's how you get your money, either on a card or in a bank account. And those have not yet started to go out, but they will very shortly. But for the rest of you, there's no rhyme or reason about this $1,400 stimulus. And so you must look at your mail. It'll come, if it's a card, it'll come in a white envelope. In fact, the Treasury sent out a press release showing you, it says economic impact payment very boldly on there. And inside the card, just so you don't get confused with some of these crazy debit cards that are IDES fraud, the inside the card is blue with silver stars on it. It's a Visa card. And on the back, it'll say Meta Bank, M-E-T-A Bank, and it'll say Money Network. Now, they're not putting any stimulus on the old cards you might have had from the last time around. It's going to be a brand new card. That's the headline for today. Look in your mail, look in your bank account, and if you're on Social Security, just wait another week or 10 days, and those will come too.
Well, I wish that it looked a little more legit. That sounds phony the way you described it, Meta Bank and fancy stars.
But that is, it's part of the debit banking network. So believe me, it's a beautiful blue card with stars and stripes on it. And you definitely want to be on the lookout for it. Do not want to throw it out.
What about, Terry, what are you hearing about the $10,000 question, the $10,200 question that people have?
It's funny because I talked to, before I went on WGN TV this morning, I texted my IRS contact, and I have his email right up here. But basically, they have updated, well, there's 3 points I'll make. Number one, they had put out a worksheet. That worksheet is updated now, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Number two, TurboTax and Tax Cuts and H&R Blocks have already updated their software to provide that when you fill it out to file, that your first $10,200 is deducted. And they urge people who have filed already but didn't know that that didn't come out till later, not to amend their returns. They're coming up any minute with a workaround where they hope to be able to automatically refund you those taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one other key point. This is interesting. Unemployment benefits have been considered part of income. So suppose in 2020 you got $14,000 or $15,000 worth of unemployment benefits, and that put you over the $150,000 joint return income level, or $75,000 on a single return. So many people, because they counted the unemployment benefits as part of their income, wouldn't get the $1,400 stimulus check. The IRS has been very generous. They came up with an interpretation, I think at the request of the Biden administration, that says when you figure your adjusted gross income to see if you qualify for the stimulus, do not include those unemployment benefits, any unemployment benefits. So more people will be eligible for the stimulus. We'll talk about how you might fix that in a minute. And if you have not filed yet, all the new software is up to date. It will adjust for the $10,200. The state, as far as I know, has not announced whether it would be also a deduction on the state return, and every state makes that decision. And do not include your unemployment benefits in figuring out whether you would be eligible for the stimulus.
Well, that's I'm glad that you caught that, because I think that does affect maybe not a lot of people, but if you're on that line and the $10,200 or whatever it is you got in unemployment benefits put you over, it's nice to hear that you don't count that as income. I have another question about that, Terry, and I know you've got more to say about it. Plus, a lot of phone calls. All the lines are busy. 312-981-7200. Call or text for Terry Savage. We pick it up with her here in just a minute. Terry Savage, the financial guru, is on a phone line. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's just interesting to me, Terry, that previously we always said your unemployment benefits are counted as income, but now, if I understand correctly, the first $10,200 will not be for the last tax year. Is that right?
Watch this. You have to, this is interesting. I'm not quite sure how they're going to handle this. We're talking apples and oranges here. So, in terms of taxation, the new tax forms are out, both a brand new worksheet and new tax software from everybody, H&R Block and TurboTax and everybody. You put in the amount of your unemployment benefits. By the way, I just had a number here around. Yeah. In the last year, 40 million people got unemployment. The average payment was $14,000 each. So many people got more because they had higher benefits. They worked in higher priced jobs. They were unemployed at the beginning when they got an extra $600 a week, which in hindsight is a little bit astounding. So there are some people that got a lot more in unemployment. But the average unemployment benefit in total last year was $14,000. You do put in for your income on your taxes, and the software will have you do that, the total amount of unemployment benefits you received. And that the software will automatically remove any tax calculation from that first $10,200. This is assuming you haven't filed yet. And don't amend your return. If you did file and didn't know about this, they're going to send you money anyway. But for those who haven't filed, the software will automatically calculate that. So that's a pretty simple thing. It's just one of those things your tax prep software will do. Now, over the weekend, they said, you know, the Congress decided to phase out those benefits very quickly. So we've had a lot of people call and say, gee, I only got, instead of $1,400, I got $832. Yeah, because you made income over $75,000, between $75,000 and $80,000 where the stimulus ends, or $150,000 and $160,000 where the stimulus ends. And the IRS, I think at the urging of the Biden administration, said, well, you know, a lot of people are missing out on stimulus checks. We don't know how many, because the unemployment benefits they got pushed them up slightly over the limit. So in the calculation for the stimulus, the $1,400 stimulus payment, we will remove. Now, you don't remove it yourself on your tax return. They will remove the unemployment benefits from your adjusted gross income. Now, how does this work? Well, as you know, the IRS now is sending out checks, stimulus, the $1,400 checks or deposits or cards, based on whatever return they have handy. If it was your 2019 return because you haven't filed 2020 yet, or because you filed it 2 weeks ago and they haven't reviewed it yet, then they're giving you a stimulus based on what was on your 2019 return. For a lot of people, 2019 was okay. 2020 was horrible because of the pandemic. They will automatically go back, and let's say you only got a partial stimulus or you didn't qualify at all based on 2019. They're going to automatically go back and review your 2020 and go, oh, we didn't send Susan a check because, you know, in 2019 she made $92,000, but look at, she must have been unemployed. in 2020. She filed a return of $80,000. But part of that was the income she earned in the first half of the year, and then she was unemployed and she got benefits. Well, she doesn't qualify anyway because it's over 75. Oh, wait, let's subtract the $11,000 worth of unemployment benefits she got. We can do that automatically, says the IRS. Now she qualifies for a stimulus.
So maybe does that, I got a lot of calls I want to get to here, but I think a lot of people have questions about why they haven't got their check yet, or why they haven't gotten a card, or why they haven't gotten a direct deposit. And maybe...
Can I make a blanket answer to that?
Yeah.
I did this last year at this time, too. Patience is going to be a great virtue. We're only 2.5 weeks into this process. Last year, it started early April and dragged on through July and into August. Please don't ask me why you haven't gotten yours yet until after... Where are we now?
20.
Until after April 15th. Okay? Give it a few more weeks. Because they're getting them out as fast as they can, and it's not easy. So just be patient until April 15th, and the next show we do after that, we'll talk about where we are then.
Got it. Okay, then let's let Bill ask his question. You're on WGN. Bill, how can we help you? You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I filed my taxes for 2019. I waited, and I had to delay it until October of last year. I went on the government IRS website to look for the status. I'm not expecting to get any of the relief because I make too much money, but I was checking on the status of my tax return, and it still shows that it hasn't even processed yet. Do you have any information on where they stand with processing 2019 returns?
Yep, the IRS commissioner made a statement on that, but let me ask you a question. Did you send money in, a check?
I paid that back in July, yeah.
Okay.
I made my payment.
No, I got it. Go ahead, Terry.
And they took your payment. Okay. The IRS commissioner, first of all, there are a lot of people who filed back in July on time and who have not received their tax refunds yet. So the IRS commissioner just recently said that they hope to get all of the 2019 returns processed in the next couple of months. And people waiting for refunds should be patient. They get interest on that. And frankly, you don't really care. It's just your curiosity about whether they've processed your return. But, Bill, I assume you haven't gotten your 14. Oh, you're not even getting the 1400. Why worry?
No.
That's the least of your problems.
I was just afraid with the way the mail service was that they didn't even get my return.
Oh, I see.
I have no idea.
Well,
did the check get
cashed? Did they use your money?
You had to get the check in before you filed the return on an extension. That check had to be in earlier. They cashed the check.
Yeah,
do not worry about it. By the way, everybody, you should file electronically. And if you do file paper return for some reason, you always have to have a certified return receipt requested, the green card that they put on the envelope. Even if you're filing electronically and you're sending in a paper copy, certify that mail with a receipt requested.
Okay, good advice, Bill. Good luck to you. Let's pick up with, I think it's Paulette is next. Hey, Paulette, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. I just have a quick question, not regarding what you guys are talking about, but I have my husband is in a nursing home, and he doesn't have a cell phone, and he can't use his hands to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I've been getting a couple of different scam letters, which I under his name, and I have reported those letters. My question to you is, I was able to do a freeze credit on my name, but when I go to do it for him, I have power of attorney. When I go to do it for him, they ask for a cell phone number, which he does not have. And if I put mine in, it bumps out the request for the freeze.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. Okay. Yes, you're obviously, are you doing these freezes requests online?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, everybody who wants to freeze, just remember, go to terrysavage.com, and below the blue box called Financial Links, there's a little box that says Identity Theft, Do This. That's where, and in that button, you'll get an article that has the links. I would suggest that for a month or two, you go out and buy what they call burner phones. just get a little cell service established in his name just for the purpose of making sure you do freeze his credit. Because it's worth doing it.
Sure.
You spend however much, $20 a month or something like that, but it will be better than having to deal with the cost of identity theft.
I'm sorry, that's the best answer, Terry, because that sounds like a ridiculous response. People who are getting power of attorney for somebody else are people who maybe are disconnected from the internet and cell phones. You ought to be able to do it some other way. Where's the helpline on that?
Well, I'm giving you my practical advice. The system is not set up. I mean, we're dealing with computers here. And if they kick it out because they have your cell phone connected to your, they shouldn't. Okay, and I'd be happy to raise the issue with TransUnion or somebody the next time I talk to them. But I'm giving you some practical advice. So sign up for a cell phone for 3 months, not the kind where you have to have a two-year contract and buy a $1,000 phone, but just a little phone for a little while. Use that in order to freeze his credit.
Is there an income limit, says 630, to be eligible for the $10,200 deduction?
No, it's the first $10,000. I'm sure I'm right about this. It's the first $10,200 of unemployment benefits,
regardless of how much money, much money you earned otherwise.
Right.
Got
it.
Okay. Terry Savage is still here and taking your calls at 312-981-7200. It's 12:35 on WGN. By the way, I'm looking at the markets online. You probably are too. The Dow is up 238. You heard a short while ago, the NASDAQ was down around 110. They're down 110 on the NAS now, but we're playing in record territory these days. Terry Savage, the financial expert, joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. Anything to say about the markets generally today, Terry?
I want to correct a misstatement I made just before we went to break. I got distracted, and I really want to sort this out. Someone asked me if there were, you asked me, and I was waiting for another call, if there was a limit on income to get that waiver on $10,200 of employment benefits. There is an income level. It is $150,000. Now, that's not just for a couple. Per person, for the worker, with modified adjusted gross income below $150,000, you may deduct up to $10,200 of unemployment benefits. And the new deal that the IRS just gave you was that your unemployment benefits that you received don't count toward that $150,000 income threshold for being able to deduct $10,200 of unemployment benefits.
Got it.
So it's a high up there thing, but I really want to correct that.
You could have received unemployment benefits having made more than $150,000, but you can't but you can't use that as a deduct. You do not get to deduct that. You count it as income, in other words. Yeah.
Exactly. But the unemployment, but when you're figuring, do I have $150,000 so I can deduct the up to $10,200, that you don't include your unemployment benefits that you received as part of that $150,000, that's per person, in order to be able to deduct unemployment.
Here's something you mentioned a moment ago. 630 said, I am a Social Security recipient, and I received my direct deposit stimulus check today. As you said, Terry,
yay,
be patient, it'll come.
Yeah, it's just starting. I mean, those are coming out. They didn't come out in the first go-round. And, in fact, a group of congressmen, including Danny Davis of Illinois, sent a letter to the IRS commissioner and Social Security saying, wait a minute, don't leave our seniors till last. So those are just starting to come out. Everybody wait till April 15th. There's nothing special about that date. I just made it up. In other words, give them another 3 weeks to get it going.
Here's one for Terry Savage on the text line. I heard about the government paying for COBRA. I paid COBRA in 2020, May through December, half the year. Will there be reimbursement or just for 2021?
No. No, that's not retroactive. That reimbursement for COBRA, which is the amount you pay, a huge amount when you leave a company, and a company allows you to have 18 months on their current insurance plan, but you have to pay not only what you were paying, but the company's side of it, too. So it's an awful lot of money. Now, nobody's set up systems for that yet. Corporations are going to be reimbursed for the COBRA costs, but it's not a reimbursement to you for paying COBRA. So if you are unemployed this year and starting April 1st through September, the government has agreed to pay the COBRA, you need to talk to the HR department where you work and say, how's this going to work? Have you called the government yet and said, Susie's unemployed and she's paying a lot of money for unemployment benefits. Should we stop charging her, government? Will you give it back to us? That's a HR department's relationship with the government.
708 said, if I invest in cryptocurrencies but do not withdraw any money, do I have to report that on my taxes? Or should I wait until I withdraw the money and put it in my bank account?
Well, so far, anyway, we are not taxing gains that you haven't taken, assuming that eventually you will take a gain. So, in fact, one of the tax proposals, strangely enough, was to tax wealth in terms of things you bought years ago, and now they're worth more. And I think it was Elizabeth Warren's proposal that we tax just appreciation on wealth for upper-level people. But, you know, you don't pay gains on anything until you take the gain.
Oh, I was under the impression that it might actually be like an equity. Like, there wouldn't be a capital gains if...
Oh, there will be, but when
you sell it.
So this is very interesting about cryptos, because who knows who's reporting what to whom? I haven't seen anything from the IRS yet. Yeah, you can buy stocks that are cryptocurrency pools. You can buy ETFs. They trade futures on Bitcoin and Ethereum on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Full disclosure, I'm a director, CME Group. But all those reported transactions, you will have a short or long-term capital gain or a loss to write off against your ordinary income.
By the way, I know that you said don't ask this question, but I think this may be a version of the question you don't want people to ask. It says, both my 2019 and 2020 income tax income was way below $75,000. I filed electronically 2 weeks before the stimulus checks were announced, and I got $722. What can I do? This is a person that's due $1,400. They got $722.
That's astounding. But we're both in both 2019 and 2020. Well,
yes.
Sorry to say this, but at this moment, the only thing you can do is wait until a year from now when you file your 2021 tax return. You know, 2021 tax return, April of 2022. There'll be a line that says, "Hey, I didn't get enough stimulus." Now, in the latest IRS statement, which I have in front of me, they did make a point that said, and I'm going to try and actually read it to you, but if you find out, let me just see if I can find it. Somewhere in here it says that if they find out after reviewing your 2020 return that you should have gotten more, they may top it up. But otherwise, you'll be able to file for the difference on your 2020.
Can't you write that in on good old line number 30 this time for the 20?
No, they're not dealing with the stimulus. To my best of my knowledge, on your 2020 return, you can only claim the first two stimulus payments.
Oh.
And if you don't get the third one, the $1,400, or get not a full payment,
right,
then you're going to have to deal with that on next year's return, unless they... if a taxpayer's payment is less than the full amount, and if it's based on the 2019 return, which may very well have happened,
yep,
they may qualify for a supplemental payment after they file their 2020 return. The IRS will automatically reevaluate their eligibility. If the agency determines they are entitled to a larger payment or the full payment, it will send them a supplemental payment covering the difference between what they originally received and the larger amount.
So did
but
you just say that
they're evaluated smaller? You don't have to pay back the difference.
But right, but in this case, then, and I think there's a lot of people like that. We get versions of this on the phone and on the text line every single time you're on, Terry. So you're saying the IRS is going to review that, and if you were underpaid, they may yet catch it, and you may yet get another check in the mail.
Exactly, but you will have a fail-safe next year at this time.
Yep.
If you believe based on 2020 that you were entitled to more than you got or some and you got none, you can claim it next year. And I don't know what line number it'll be next year.
Mark had a question for Terry Savage. You're on WGN. Hi, Mark. How can we help you?
Hey, I appreciate everything you do, Terry. John, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The Illinois tax, there was something big on the Illinois Department of Revenue website, Terry, that in reference to the $10,200 taxpayer credit for unemployment. Illinois says they will be applying that. They just issued this statement Monday on the Illinois Department of Revenue website. So they're going to do the same thing for people who filed before, like the federal government. They will be able to get their money back later. Who knows when? It's Illinois, after all. And they don't have to file an amended return. So it appears the state of Illinois will also be honoring the $10,200 exemption. Also, quick note regarding TurboTax, the CD version or desktop version has not updated yet. The online version is taking into account the $10,200 difference, just so you know.
Thank you very much. And now that you mention it, I do remember seeing that on Monday. I got so used to saying, I don't know what Illinois is going to do, but that's really a great update. And, you know, by the way, if you're, it sounds like you're a CPA, does TurboTax...
No, I follow this.
When they are doing... So the interesting thing is if whether they will also quickly adjust for the states that are following along with the $10,200 break.
It is the assumption, right. It's the assumption. But like I said, if you have the CD version, the one you pay for, they haven't done that one yet. But if you have the free version and file online, TurboTax is taking care of that right now. We don't know when they're going to update the actual desktop version of their program yet.
Good deal, Mark. Okay. Thanks for the help on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And that's all the time we have, Terry. TerrySavage.com for a score of helpful links, articles, and information. Visit TerrySavage.com. Okay, Ter, another Wednesday.
Thanks,
we'll
John.
Visit again. That's Terry Savage. Zoom, zoom, zoom. 12:44. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. And the business news continues with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The board of directors at Tribune Publishing has recommended that shareholders accept a takeover bid from the hedge fund Alden Global Capital. This comes despite a better offer on the table from a Maryland hotel magnate. Stuart Bainum Jr. offered to buy Tribune for $18.50 a share. Alden's bid was $17.25 per share. Alden already owns a 32% stake in Tribune Publishing. The Chicago-based logistics software company Four Kites has raised $100 million in new funding. Investors include private equity firm Thomas H. Lee Partners and chipmaker Qualcomm. Four Kites specializes in technology that gives manufacturers and customers better information about the location of their products in the supply chain. Four Kites brags about a client base that includes half of the Fortune 500, including Coca-Cola, Walmart Canada, and 3M. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And we got Steve Alexander with Agribiz.
Hey, let's talk about the gardening business. A lot of us are getting antsy, John, as the weather kind of turns. In fact, Bill Snyder, who's a member of Tom Skilling's WGN weather team, tweeted out yesterday that Chicago's temperatures had reached 60 or more for the seventh time this month, the most 60s in March since 2012. The drought year. Well, today could, it could be the 8th, but I don't think so. We're about 57 right now. That has a lot of us thinking about yard work, including longtime WGN contributor Jim Fazell. He says right now, repairing winter damage is job one, and the first place to look is your lawn.
Those of us who have taken a good look at our lawn since the snow disappeared have discovered that some of the grass is growing pretty nicely, and there are areas where the grass is matted down and squashed down. These are areas where the snow sat. Now, that grass looks like it's dead. Actually, the leaves are all dead, but the grass plant itself is not dead. The little crown from which these things grow is still there, and all we need to do is to allow it to grow. It eventually will, but you can speed things up by raking up the grass as soon as it's dry enough to get the grass to stand up and allow that ground to dry out. This will allow this grass to begin growing. Now, the reason the grass is dead in those areas or the leaves are dead is it's due to a couple of fungi called snow mold. These grow, strangely enough, when the temperatures are near freezing and there's free moisture. So you want to rake it up, blow it off if it's dry enough to do that, get rid of as much of that old debris as you can. And it might be a good idea, if these areas have been problematic in the past, to consider in the future filling in a little bit to raise those areas so they drain better. And for the time being, you could do some grass seeding right now, not just in those areas, but in other areas where the grass has been thin in the past. If you sow seed now, it will germinate about the 20th of April, which will be just in time for us to really be outdoors and enjoying things.
Gardening guru Jim Fazell, great to hear him on WGN again. Mr. Fizz will be back tomorrow at this time with tips on fixing tree damage from the heavy snows a while back. As National Agriculture Week continues, today is National Cheese Steak Day and National Chocolate Covered Raisin Day. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Vamsi Banthala joins us now, the CEO of Arbor Lodging Partners, arborlodging.com. Vamsi, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Arbor Lodging invests in hotels. Is that right?
That's right. We are a owner-operator of hotels around the country. We own and operate coast to coast, but based out of Chicago. And that's everything that you'll see off the side of the road, like Hampton Inns and Courtyards, up to upscale boutique hotels as well.
How do I invest in your company? I mean, what's the stake for our listeners in your case?
Sure. So generally, the way that we structure our deals is we partner with large institutional capital partners, many kind of name brand type of investment firms that you've heard of. And then we also usually create a portion that's allocated for individual investors as well to come and invest with us. So it's an interesting opportunity of where you get to invest in hotels with what we consider ourselves to be experts, but as well as investing alongside very large institutional money managers too.
So Hyatt, Hilton, you would actually be managing properties like that?
That's right. Yeah. So generally, while those brands do manage some properties, the vast majority of their assets are under a franchise model. So we enter into a license agreement with them.
Wow.
And really just use their distribution system, their brand equity, and then we manage the property independently.
That's interesting. I always assumed that the company owned all of their properties, but they are licensing the brand, in other words.
That's right. Yeah, it's actually one of the big surprises a lot of people come across as we talk to them about the business is that it's very similar to, like other franchise businesses, right. Fast food.
Sure.
The difference there is the corporate entity tends to have a heavier hand in operations, whereas we really operate very independently. We set pricing independently, group blocks, sales, all of that is done at the ground level.
I guess an example of that, though, maybe we shouldn't be too surprised, is we've learned from the last president that his name on a thing doesn't mean that's his company, but rather it's just his name. So when I look at the Trump Hotel over here, I don't believe Donald Trump owns that, but somebody else does, and they've used his name.
Yeah, I think actually in Chicago, that is one of the few assets he does own. In most cases, you're right.
Yeah.
And even the public markets have treated that differently. A lot of these large companies like Marriott, for example, used to own a lot of real estate and many years ago split that off into a REIT. And today's core Marriott business that you could invest in really is mostly in the licensing business.
Has the pandemic discounted prices? Is this a good time to invest in lodging that way?
We think so, but for a different reason than I would have predicted a year ago. I think what happened last year happened so quickly and so fast. It seemed like a no-brainer that we were going to have these once-in-a-lifetime distressed asset sales. But between some breathing room that was provided by lenders, additional money that a lot of owners put in, as well as relief from the government in the form of PPP, ended up not creating this mass sale frenzy that a lot of us were worried about as owners, but also licking our chops about as buyers. But what's happening now is we are seeing some more modest discounts, but really we have an immense amount of pent-up demand. And so there's a lot of bullishness from an operational standpoint over the next few years. We've gone through a really, really rough 12 months, but forward bookings look pretty positive. Week over week, we're seeing growth. And even if I just talk to my neighbors or my friends, everybody seems to be itching for a trip. So we see that as positive tailwinds in the business right now.
Everybody's looking for tells these days. That's very interesting about the return of the economy, isn't it? That the price of the hotels has not fallen into the basement. Why? Because they know they're coming back and they're going to come back strong, right?
I think that's right. A lot of times when you sell at a distressed price, it's not necessarily that you want to mark to market that day, but you're being forced for other reasons, primarily because your loan is due or something like that. And by having the chance to wait through this, a lot of asset value has been recaptured.
Did you know all of that 12 months ago?
I did not. I was under the covers hiding. No, just kidding. But it was a really interesting time for a couple of months there. I think we knew that things were going to come back. I don't think that we recognized that they would come back as quickly. And by that, I mean really from an asset value and sales market perspective. Operationally, we're way better than where we were at the bottom, but we've still got a long way to go. Right now, the general consensus in the industry is that we probably don't get back to 2019 numbers until 2023 on a select service hotel basis and probably 2024 or 25 for some of the full service hotels.
Any other wisdom you'd like to pass along to our listeners today?
I don't think I have wisdom, but I would say be safe, get vaccinated, and please travel. Hoteliers are ready and waiting to welcome you.
Yeah, I think that's true. And but I don't know if that's the last leg or at least a pivotal leg in the return. I mean, you've got airlines, you've got cruise ships, you've got destinations, museums, but they all got to stay in hotels. All of those, that's a real hub, isn't it, for all of these things?
That's right. And just as a comparative example, if you think about the two real estate asset classes that got hit the hardest, you had hotels and retail. And most investors think about retail, that just accelerated a trend line that was already well underway. And they don't necessarily want to go back into retail in a big way. But everybody feels pretty confident that there are big movements happening that are going to continue to create mm-hmm. hotel demand, especially if you even look at a generational standpoint. We've really moved to an economy where people want to spend money on experiences over things. And that's all great from a hotel perspective. And it's just a matter of time, but we all do feel that demand will return.
Vamsi Banthala is the CEO of Chicago-based Arbor Lodging Partners. Vamsi, let's visit again. Fascinating stuff. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And expertise.